Hello, world. Welcome.
Hello, world. All of you. There's so many people in here, but all 7,000 people.
Welcome to PG.biz. Yes, and you know what? We are going to be coming out more and more. You're going to hear more about it because we've been like grassroots, this organic growth, and it's just through the roof. I don't know if you check the numbers. It's like, you know, 9,000 subscribers.
Oh, it's going well, this
just
podcast.
Just because it's cool. And we have it weekly, and now we have it live. So this is the big deal. And it's just about the show because we're drawing a line under it, just closing it now, and 10 years on top of that. And you've been out there. You've been the eyes and the ears of everyone who couldn't visit the tracks, couldn't talk to the cool people, that wasn't doing what you were doing. For example, Chris, chatting up in the VIP room, talking to...
I wasn't chatting up anyone in the VIP room.
No, you were talking to cool people and I talked to them.
Don't let my wife see this. I'll be in all sorts of trouble. I was just talking to people.
Well, that's natural, Chris. So we know what you do. Let's talk about what left massive impression, you know, something from the show. We'll start with that moment and then we'll get through some themes and some trends. But like, you know, something had to have been like the wow moment.
It's a wow moment. I mean, there's been so many great things. The thing I want to say for people that unfortunately couldn't attend the show, the energy. I know there's a lot of negativity at the moment in the industry. For sound reasons, a lot of people losing their jobs, and I do. That isn't great, right? No one wants that to happen. And you know, the industry feels like it's been a little bit flat, or we're struggling a little bit post COVID. But the positivity and the energy on the floors. And in the tracks, the last 2 days has been incredible. Obviously, not everybody's going, oh, the future's incredible. But generally, the spirit and the energy here makes me feel we're going to be just fine, right? Like, there's so many talented people out there listening to their visions for everything from, like, you know, improving their monetization and their kind of, you know, their advertising through to whole new platforms and technologies they're adopting. I always find it inspiring. I don't get to listen to as many tracks as I'd like, but I felt kind of rejuvenated. For an old man has been made very happy. That's good. So that's, I don't know what that means, but this is my 10th year of doing this. I'm going to be 50 this year. That's almost as old as Craig. So
almost.
Kind
of the same thing. It's really interesting just hearing everyone, just the different ways they're trying to tackle the challenges that are going on. But there's always, right now, particularly a lot of challenges, but they're always there. They've always been there. So there's always something new to overcome. I think one of my favorite moments was the Brightest Britain panel, where we had some an amazing panel with the CEO of Trailmix, the CEO of Triple Dot, Ian Livingstone was on it.
Paul Gauge kind of turned up about 10 minutes before after his flight from Manchester, didn't get blown over, but he's ex of Playdemic, but now Fourth Star, brand new.
Yeah,
exclusive interview with you, I believe, on the site.
Exclusive interview. Thanks very much to Paul for that. He's and Alex's, well, it is their fourth studio, so no prizes for guessing how they got that name. One of my favorite bits is in his 10 minutes that he got onto the stage, bless him that he made it, he was saying that, and he said the same thing in the interview, that I was like, why launch a studio now? It's, you know, it's such a tough time. Like, why do it now? And he said, well, doing it for 25 years, and to be honest, I've always been told now, oh, don't do it now. Now is a really bad time to launch a new studio. So, like, you have to do it at some point. But I think that comes from, he's seen all the cycles. He knows, like, you can make a success. And if you look over the last year, we have seen some big successes. It's been really tough. You know, obviously, there's been lots of layoffs that we'll discuss. But there have been huge successes. Monopoly Go, super amazingly well, obviously big IP, and then you get
we had one of the founding fathers today of Scopely was in
Eric,
he was very good as well.
He was brilliant.
Tell us all about how he could just kept stuffing ads into Yahtzee and just kept making money. I was like, what use is saying, yeah, it's all about player experience, we just put an ad in and we put another ad in and we kept making more money. It's like, okay, that's good. So
I like
put more ads in. That's what players want, it's more ads. I learned that. That's what
I liked how he said, like, they fundamentally sort of changed how Yahtzee is by, I think, adding in
an extra dice. Ball.
But players seem to really love that. So that was really interesting. But yeah, like, I think there's a lot of positivity still out there.
They adapt the gameplay. We look forward. I missed it, but I would have loved to have heard the one where it was, you know, going back into the history of games and trying to find older games and bring them back. And people were like saying, hey, attend that one because, you know what? Get some great ideas, you know? Look at Monopoly, look at everything else. Aaron, you are on the staff now. I knew you were freelancing before, but now you're here and you've been out there. What was your experience?
So I've been around to a lot of the talks over the past 2 days. Written up about quite a few of them, so be sure to check out the website.
Nice plug.
Yeah, shameless plug, but we love it.
So I think one of the most interesting ones I've seen was from the UX writer at King. There was a really interesting sort of behind the scenes of the whole UX system and process of basically optimizing the kind of language that's used around the iconography in the game to kind of make players either keep playing more or do different things or watch adverts. Like there were different iterations of trying to encourage people to watch ads. And then some statistics on, like, you know, when we said, you know, free items, you know, click here, and it has a little like movie symbol, that had much better returns than just like watch ad as an option.
Watch ad. Who knew? But it is all about the detail.
Who would have thought?
It's all about the detail, right? I mean, that is, especially mobile, small changes can have such a huge effect. And I know it's not very sexy talking about how I've optimized my ads, but actually that is part of the business, right? Is making that revenue. I don't know if anybody else saw, was one of our sponsors, and I'm going to forget the name, it's very bad, they were talking about, I'm going to check this because I'm going to...
It's not live, we can edit it.
You can do this in post. No, it's not live. Oh, what was it? I saw it earlier, it was brilliant. It was Social Petter had a talk, and they were showing loads of these really kind of quite crazy ads, some of which looked, but they were showing how ads are like games themselves, right? They're kind of like mini games in themselves, and they're really, really more, almost as much work is going into kind of the ad creative as is into the actual creation of some of the game levels, which, it was kind of fascinating. I mean, I know obviously advertising, I'm not naive to think people don't spend fortunes in advertising for other products, but the sophistication of and the possibilities are really, really fascinating, I thought.
I think that's one of the big trends right now. I mean, obviously it's been going on for a long time, but just approaches to creatives, because more important than ever when user acquisition is as challenging as it's ever been, you've got to get your creatives right. And then the iterative process that goes into that, you know, I've spoken with a few publishers, and they're doing it like weekly, just constant different creatives, and they're planning ahead, like a year ahead, making sure they've done their testing, know which one's going to work the best. Yeah, a tremendous amount of work goes into that side of things.
And a tremendous amount of AI. That's why you had these tracks that were standing room only. I mean, the AI ones that I was in yesterday, fantastic, and all of it about the creative and also the game, but some incredible things going on there.
It is amazing that everyone's adopted AI now. Like our AI sessions so far have been, over the last year, as you say, always rammed. Everyone's fascinated. Yeah. But we're having to move now from being, AI is interesting, you can maybe do this, to really detailed, here's how you achieve this in there. But like, everyone's using it. Like we haven't managed to replace the editorial staff yet, but that will come.
You're trying.
No, but everyone, it's amazing. It's not amazing that the very clever game developers are adopting technologies, but the scale to which everyone's using this one way or another is, I don't know, I find it impressive and also slightly terrifying. I don't know, but what do you think?
I find it, kind of... the same, kind of both. I think some AI technology is super impressive, and I think the point that gets made a lot is, like it or hate it, you probably have to at least learn it, some of the tools, because maybe in a few years, we don't know, but maybe in a few years that will become critical to your role, and someone else is going to know it, so you kind of have to know it.
I don't think you can afford, you don't have to embed it in all your game and all your processes, but you can't afford not to stay up with it and understand it and watch how it could be used, because it is just, you know, you were saying about creatives, if someone's going to create 40 or 100 times more creatives in a second, then you've got a whole team working on. You need to, you don't have to sack your team, but you need to be aware that that's how that works and whether you can use that as well, right?
It's not just the productivity. It was Gus from Cosmic Lounge, mind-blowing, that it wasn't the productivity, it was the process. Yeah. So it's the idea that AI will optimize a creative, but it will also put it into sort of like a loop where if you do it properly, and he is doing it like this, then you give the audience data back to ChatGPT, and then what you have is you have automatically and forever optimizing and iterating in a loop. And that is pretty cool.
What could possibly go wrong? And then they come.
Then what can go wrong? Yeah, what can go wrong? It's got to be perfect.
And then the nuclear bombs fall, and that's the end.
And then you take that, right? And then you make the game from it as well. So it's just like, you know, at some point, I don't know the company of one, but it's just sounding like that.
But one thing I will say about AI that I really don't like is I think, like, sometimes they have to base, I'm forgetting words here now, but base, like, how it learns on stuff that a company owns, and so the stuff that's created is, you know, they own the copyright to that. I really hate, you got these amazing generative AI tools, but some of them, they're based on copyrighted work.
Yes.
And I cannot believe that is currently allowed.
Yeah, we're like, talking about that, but what you're going to have to do, that was in one of that really cool track, by the way, about what's this, is this going to look like legally? And the whole idea was, you will have to tell what were your prompts, and you will have to talk about the data set. So the whole idea was, you know, get really excited about it, experiment, get in there, but try to own your data set and keep your prompts. That's going to be like your IP, because if the content was out there, then what you did with it is your IP.
Yeah.
So it goes, there is a different way.
Unequivocally going to be some serious legal, you know, activity and suits going around AI created content. It's inevitable. It's as usual, it's kind of the law catching up, and, you know, there are lawyers sharpening their pencils everywhere, getting prepared for this. The lawyers always win, right? The lawyers and the accountants always win. So the lawyers, they've not been AI'd out yet. They will at some point, I guess, but they are. There's going to be stuff happening already. This is not really from our show, but I want to talk about this. So I'm going.
Okay,
so has everybody been following the Power World thing? Right. So Power World is this game. Is it Power World? I think it's called
Power World. Power World.
So it's like, it's, how can you describe it as being Pokemon with guns without saying that? Okay, it's Pokemon with guns. It's kind of Pokemon with guns. That's how it's sort of described.
It is literally an Electabuzz with like a rail gun or an AK.
So it's Pokemon with guns. It's kind of come from kind of nowhere, apparently. Blown up on Steam to be the records, like concurrent players or whatever. Insane. Like shifted 4 million copies or something. And it is Pokemon. So there's this whole thing going online at the moment. This is not mobile. Maybe it's mobile, but it's fascinating. Because the legal thing makes me think of that. That case is going to be... That's what we're going to be hearing about, how amazing this is. And then in 2 weeks' time, it's going to be hearing about how it's all been shut down again because Nintendo have good lawyers and they are not going to take that.
Well, luckily, Nintendo isn't very litigious about these things.
That's true. They're notoriously relaxed about it. alongside Disney, they're fine.
I haven't played it. I've seen a lot of games.
It looks great. I definitely want to play it before it gets shut down. That's my tip.
Without the guns, like, where is this game? Where is this version of Pokemon? Like, it's not there.
No.
Like,
I mean,
that's like Nintendo is missing.
To be fair, they are different. The characters, before we get sued, they are different. And I'm sure maybe they're not based, but they do look similar. And a lot of people have pointed out online that the models underneath look uncannily similar in proportions and stuff. So I don't know. But the reason I mention that, as apart from the fact that it's all buzzing up with my feed at the moment, is that kind of feeds into the AI stuff for me and how AI, the creation of new things and who and the ownership of IP, as you mentioned, is that, I don't know how much it was raised. I didn't get to attend all the AI talks. I was chairing a couple of other tracks, but I imagine that will be increasingly a conversation point if it isn't already.
Yeah, so, it came up quite a lot through the talks.
Okay.
Without really any solution, but
no solution, great debate.
Just carry on. I think that's the solution, isn't it? Yeah, we'll carry on making them and don't worry about it.
But another thing that was like an incredible success, I mean, wasn't expecting this, web shops. I mean, we were chatting about this, Craig. It was like, I get this. At one level, it's like, yes, it's empowerment. I control the merchandising. I control the experience. But then we're thinking about this, like, how are developers going to do this? How many partners? You know, all these different things, the payments. What were you picking up on, Craig? I know that this was something that you were like, also... Yes, web shops. And track next time for sure, right? Just on the web shops.
We are San Francisco with like four web shop tracks. That's quite simple.
Just an entire conference. Just
a web shop connects.
Web shop connect.
You heard it first, right? Yeah.
Yeah, but it's caught me off by surprise.
I it's funny, like I was saying earlier, I was speaking to AppCharge and I was like, do you know what, quite a few years ago, you know, when there were some payments companies, I wasn't really that interested in doing some of those interviews. It's like many years ago when I was last at PocketGamer.biz. Cut to now, 2023, you've just seen a real rise in publishers, and they're now... In some ways, it flies under the radar, but kind of everyone knows about it, but it's just not been spoken about a lot. And you see in financials, you know, companies starting to make 20-30% of their revenue just from their web stores. And they're all doing it, okay, obviously, just to get away from the clutches of Apple and Google. Well,
yeah. I mean, it's two things. It's one, it's money. It's at the moment, it's additional revenue. Like, why would you not? You're leaving money. If you haven't got a web shop, you're basically leaving money on the table, right? And the other thing is exactly that, is that you know, the people... There's been a lot of deference and respect, and you know, there is kind of goodwill to a point towards the platforms and the shops. You know, Apple built an ecosystem. It's their right to declare the rules. But I have not heard for some time the open sort of revolt. People, you know, you chat about it in a bar, but not on stages where people go, look, well, why? This just isn't right. Why? And this is like big game developers saying Apple... you know, they don't do enough to be charging 30% at the moment. They built the ecosystem, they've got to support it, I get that. But they're mainly a payment provider for most people. So yeah. Payment providers don't charge 30%, right? So
yeah.
Well, that's not what they say anymore, right? That was the case, and then now they go, oh no, it's a platform fee.
It's a platform fee,
and apparently the payment is worth 3% to them.
Oh, that's true. Well, as you know, it's 27% platform fee now. I get it. If you're for Apple, I totally understand, you know, where you're coming from. You've invested a large amount into build this and invest into lots of things, but
it's, I think they got it back.
But there's a lot. But the developers are, you know, the natives are restless. There's one thing definitely a trend from this event. Time and time again, this came up, and it wasn't just people being annoyed about IDFA, which they still are, and all that stuff. But now they're also annoyed about, you know,
the commission.
And yes. I think that, you know, the web shops is seen as a way to just get out that and have that direct relationship. And owning the customer, going back to IP and ownership, owning the customer was a big thing that came up two or three times. Like, who owns a customer? And developers think they own their customers, and maybe they're right. I don't know.
Well, we were talking about earlier, I was saying, you know, it's actually, in a way, it's encouraging developers to build and look after their communities more, and obviously take them out of the store and put them on Discord or wherever they're going to put their communities, their website, I don't know. And then from there, that's where you take them to the web store. Or from there, you can take them and do other stuff. I don't know. Direct contact with your consumers. A really good benefit of web stores, not just you earn a lot of money.
Has anybody here actually used a web store yet? I realize I haven't. No. I was thinking about doing it, going, yeah, this web's brilliant. And I think I've bought things on the web, right? Amazon's quite popular these days. But I should. Why are we not doing this?
Aaron, did you hear people talking about, anyone tried it? Anybody was excited about
the website?
Yeah.
I've definitely heard people talk about it, but I haven't tried them out either.
So I must not tried it out. We all have paying, to. We all have to do it. We all have to.
Everybody get a game. I mean, so many developers have got. I mean, Scopely made a lot of money of that way. Miniclip made a lot of money that way. Supercell. Yeah. All the big guys are doing it. But that, yeah. So with AI, web shops.
Yeah.
What else?
Before we move on, I have one thing, a question for people. No one I've spoken to knows the answer. So obviously Epic had a win for about 2 hours, and then Apple cut
out. That was kind of cool. There was like, yeah, we've won. And then it's like, no, you
haven't. I heard the champagne bottles pop from the payments companies. And then
they just put it back in again.
What's the quote? And then suddenly a million voices just
cried out, and then it was silence.
But so Apple's now going to charge you 27%. And I believe the rule is that, okay, you link away. Obviously, then there's a horrible message that comes up. And if that user spends within 7 days on that web shop, Apple charges 27%. But my question is, does Apple own that user indefinitely? So forever with that game, that publisher, do they own that user? So what happens after a month, 2 weeks or a month, that same user makes another purchase on that web store?
It's a good question. And how do they track that? Like, I know you can, you obviously have tracking links, but like tracking links get subsumed by the links, and presumably Apple would then have to demand to be absolutely confident, they'd have to kind of audit the web store, because how would they know? Because once it's gone outside the ecosystem, they don't necessarily know. So,
but then also,
does anyone know the answer to this? Because we don't know that.
That's, yeah, I don't.
No, we know this.
But also, no one saw it.
Also, to track that, it's not very privacy centric.
Yeah, I was going to say.
But which privacy is the main concern?
Track. Oh yeah, of course. Yeah, sorry. Yeah, it wasn't
privacy and brand. You know, are we gonna go off? Or are they gonna send some sort of like, you know, warning, you're leaving the confines of the secure app store where everything is checked. Who knows? But another topic that came up a lot, which was surprising, because a couple of years ago it was like, yeah, but it's a non-gaming thing. It's a non-gaming thing, subscription models. I'm hearing a bit of a comeback. Maybe it's just that search for other models to figure it out, because it's all about diversification anyway. I mean, diversify was the word, was the motto. Subscription models. I heard about it. What did you hear about, Craig?
I think there's a slight come down from thinking this is going to be like the future.
Yeah.
And now I think... Forget it. It's not so sure. I guess we're not really talking about mobile here, though. For subscriptions, yeah. For that, if it's like a Netflix service, it's most likely that's for like console, PC. But I don't necessarily see it as the future now. I think that TV and film streaming companies have struggled a bit now, especially now, like money's not as easy to come by, and that's what they've kind of lived on to scale. So I think there's a struggle there, and now you're just seeing them do what TV has always done, which is put ads in
or bundle it,
and now it's just sort of turning into normal television.
Maybe
the model doesn't work.
It's fascinating. They're kind of turning back to all those things where you could binge it, and now it's all serialized weekly at a certain time released. It's like, we've done that before. That's what we used to have with ads on it. But I didn't hear much subscriptions this time. I didn't hear as much about it, but I you know, it's still people are, you know, alternative revenue models, right? That's what people are looking for, different ways. A, they want more money, and B, they want to be outside the control of the app store. Favorite talk. So I'm taking over because I've got a game 5 minutes. So I've got the BIP thing and results I've got announced. So I was very excited. So what was your favorite, Peggy? Well, you've seen a lot. What was your favorite thing, Peggy? What was your favorite either talk or topic?
Oh, I have to say I was hanging out in the AI track first day. I was like,
so you're AI
nailed. I was there, because it's also about using the data that you have. So I was talking to a lot of people, and they're like, yeah, you know, I've got first party data. If I hook this up with AI, if I optimize it, if I can automate it, you know, I'm going to be just like not maybe an ad network, but I'm going to have an edge here, and I'm going to be able to do this in-house. It was like, this wasn't just the dream anymore of the larger companies. This was like, you know, coming down to some mid companies, because data matters, right? So for me, it was AI and the data.
Okay, AI data.
AI data.
What was your favorite, Aaron? What did you really come away?
So another AI one I really liked, I think it was Corbomite Games.
Oh, yeah.
Started off yesterday. So, you know, first thing in the morning, you know, Monday morning, not everyone's favorite time of day.
The 6 a.m. session, everyone likes it.
But so went into, you know, sat down, got ready, got set up. And so it was a talk about AI, and the whole presentation was made using AI. There were like over 200 slides, and it was all like AI generated stuff. So really kind of set the tone. And they had an AI generated song about PGC.
Oh, wow.
Oh, nice. It's like karaoke all over again.
Yeah.
Like, wow. Now I'm going to have to go and watch the video. Yeah. It will also be available in the for people that attended in the video vault in a couple of weeks.
For the podcast. I'm now
obsessed with that. That's good. Okay, was it a good song?
Yeah, really. What was it about?
It was like a modern pop.
Can you give us a go?
Give us a couple of bars.
It was a female vocalist. I can't do it justice.
good cop out. That was good. That's a female vocalist.
Can't do that one, Aaron.
So, what was your favorite, Craig?
I kind of said earlier, I still loved the Brightest Britain panel, because we had just, you know, what's the word? Creme de la creme of the UK games industry. They're all giving really good advice and just kind of telling their experiences that they've been through. And that, things are tough now, but, you know, things could get better.
And I think with that, one thing I wanted to say earlier is that often the biggest, most successful, strongest companies are launched in a recession or a downturn. Like, obviously, one of the things, the flip side of, unfortunately, people losing their roles at the moment is that there's an incredible amount of talent. There's going to be a lot of new startups coming out because people, yeah, you know, aren't going to sit on their hands forever. People don't tend to leave the games industry if they can possibly help it. Like, it's not, people might, they might pop away to something else and come back. So I think in some ways, it's probably not a better time to start something new because, you know, people's expectations are a bit low. Yeah, raising money is going to be kind of tougher. That's the one thing. But if you can do something without needing, you know, a fortune, if you can do it on angel investments early or just bootstrap it, I think it's not a terrible time. So, I think the positivity, like you said, was good. I saw three things I thought were brilliant.
Okay.
One was, I love data. So whenever someone like a data AI on Yuzu talk, I love it because I always use their stuff all the time. And they both talk and they both kind of delivered. Data AI kind of sort of dropped in some really interesting numbers and talked about.
They had good news.
They basically said the industry grew. Yes. They said the mobile games industry did grow. The only reason their overall numbers didn't grow was because of China. Like everywhere apart, China was down like 10%, but with take China out,
and
the whole thing was up 4%, right? So that was positive. And they had loads of good tracks. So they've got a report, I'm sure, to check out because it's always full of great stuff. The interesting news came on and they kind of were a little bit more, our number's probably about right, but maybe a bit lower overall. But they did say, they had a really good talk about going from using mobile IP into PC, which kind of sounds like kind of negative, but actually the whole cross-platform thinking, that stuff was really kind of got me thinking that I was thinking, oh, that's not very positive, is it? Why are you leaving mobile? But it's not necessarily about leaving mobile. It's about going, I can still build my brand, my game here, but I can also monetize it in a different way or in a different place. And that was really interesting. That's a good talk. And what's the other thing I saw? I can't remember now. The Scopy guy, I thought that was brilliant. He was, you know, it's not often you have like a probable billionaire in the room. He probably isn't a billionaire, but he sold it for $5 billion. I don't reckon he's hard up. But he had a kind of a saintly glow about him of someone who just knew what he was doing, and his new business of helping games companies seems pretty smart. But yeah, he was really interesting talking a bit about Yahtzee. He couldn't say much about Monopoly Go, is everybody else playing Monopoly Go? I know all these interactions. Hands are we playing Monopoly Go here? We've got people, everybody.
Yeah, everybody.
Why are we playing it? It's so stupid, but I can't stop playing it. It's just so stupid.
It feels so, when you roll the dice,
it's so good and so bad. It's like, I'm going around so I can get the stickers, which you can never get. I'm going to Facebook and posting. I'm a 49-year-old man going to Facebook going, can I trade this little picture of a dog for a little picture? It's insane.
Return a farm bill.
It's incredible, but it's so good, but so bad. That was fascinating getting insight from those people. And we had some really high caliber people here, so that was really cool. Sorry, I'm keep looking at my watch. I've got a game.
We don't have a watch. We don't have a clock, but we have to end it by looking to the next one, Chris. I mean, this is a hard one to top. What is next? We've got a lot going on.
We're doing an awful.
We're doing a ton.
We've got about 7 more this year.
I know.
We actually did plan to do 7 last year. Now we're San Francisco next. So if you're going out for GDC week, our GDC adjacent or affiliated or event starting is on Monday, Tuesday, GDC week. That's going to be good. That's already getting really good sign-ups. So we're happy with that. Then we're in Dubai. It's start of May, which is a much better time to go to Dubai than mid-June, where we went last year, where it was a little bit too hot. But that's brilliant, actually. The Middle East, that was another thing that came out some of the data. The Middle East is the fastest growing part of the games industry. It's kind of a much, I wouldn't say it's a blue ocean, but it's a much sort of much less scarlet ocean than some of the other worlds. There's genuine opportunity there, and I think if you're not already looking at the Middle East, you should go to our show or take a visit and just get your head around it, because that's a very young population, very fast growing in terms of gaming population, and there's a lot of money out there as well. And then we'll be doing the Mobile Games Awards in Gamescom this year. We're going to make it bigger. It's going to be a dinner. It's been cool. And then we've got PGC Helsinki, end of September, start of October.
Yeah.
And then we've got Jordan and Saudi Arabia to fit in. And maybe another one, but I'm not allowed to talk about it.
Oh.
So we'll have 7 or 8. It'll be fine. But so you can go to PGC everywhere. There'll be one in your house at some point. We'll AI it.
Well, I mean, you did try that during the pandemic. To be fair.
We did do a PGC in your house.
We're going to make it a thing. We're going to do this at everyone. Come on. There's got to be everyone, a way to fit it in. We got to have it.
Cool.
With the whole team, with a greetings to Charlie and to Daniel and everyone else who's out there still working at the end. Bring them all together here.
We're going to do it again, but thank you for this is a bit of an impromptu thing because we lost a couple of speakers. We thought we'd try and fill the space, so we're gonna bid you farewell to this. I don't know, how do you wrap up the podcast usually? I haven't been on it twice.
You're coming back.
Yeah, but how do you wrap it up? How do you wrap up?
How do we wrap it up?
Not the whole series.
Oh, come on. I don't want to wrap it up the way we really do it, because then we say, before we leave, we have to ask you your favorite game of all time.
Okay.
So we're not going to... Are we going to do that? Oh, what the hell? Yours, I probably know. Monopoly Go.
My favorite game of all time?
Yeah.
That's an incredibly difficult question.
Alien Isolation is the best game I've ever played.
Sensible Soccer, probably. That's really dating me. Okay. I just love
Craig
football games.
Craig is very determined here. And come on, Aaron.
I'll go with Xenoblade Chronicles 3.
It's very specific. 3, the third version, is always the best. Yeah. Right.
We've done it.
Cool. I've got to go and announce things. So thank you very much for staying here and listening to us.
And to our audience here. Hey, thanks so much.
Live response.
This show is all about how to do your job better, how to make an amazing game, how to market it, and you have a say. So if you have a story or know someone we need to shine a light on, then we would love to hear from you.
We want to hear from you. We want to reflect the reality of the mobile games market in all its wonderful complexity and strangeness. So if you have any suggestions for us, if you have any feedback for us, you can always get in touch. You can email us at podcast@pocketgamer.biz. You can find us on Twitter @PGBiz, and you can reach out to us through the pocketgamer.biz website. If you're interested in listening to all of our podcasts, you can find them at pocketgamer.biz/podcast, and we would love to hear your thoughts on future shows.
And we've got you covered on all the major platforms, so subscribe to the audio podcast, as Brian said. Look for us on YouTube. If you want to read it, hey, you can do that too, because we have a companion post for you as well on the pocketgamer.biz website.
Tune in again for the next edition of the pocketgamer.biz podcast, and we look forward to speaking to you in the near future. Until then, I'm Brian Baglow.
I'm Peggy Ann Saltz, and that's a wrap until next week.